Okay, tonight we continue our study going, you could say, at highway speed through the Old Testament. More or less a study of a survey, a bird's eye view. Think of the birds flying overhead. And the bird's eye view is some things are seen better from the sky. You get a bigger picture of major themes. And so that's kind of our perspective here. We did a two-part study on Genesis, and now, Lord willing, a two-part study on Exodus. Now, I was thinking of skipping Exodus, because Pastor Ron's going verse by verse through Exodus. But I talked with him and just mentioned, well, if someone were to listen to this study, this is a different way of looking at Exodus, because it's a real, just a quick bird's eye view of some major themes, and then it'll be a part of this whole study. So, in Exodus, when we ponder Exodus, this is a big theme that I'm going to be focusing on, is that God works sovereignly, that comes out when one looks at the broad picture reading through Exodus. Exodus challenges the false idea that God is passive, the false idea that God is not active in our world. It challenges that. It says the living and true God is active in our world in many different ways. When we think of Genesis, just think of Genesis on how active God is. He created the whole universe. It's all recorded there and how he did it in the sequence in Genesis chapter 1. How he judged. He was active in judging Adam and Eve. He judged Cain, yet showed mercy on him, but he judged Cain for murdering Abel. He judged the evil world at that time with a worldwide flood, right? He judged those at the Tower of Babel, making them scatter. He sovereignly picked Abraham, as Joshua 24 says. He took Abraham from beyond the river, an idol worshiper with his family. Why didn't he take Abraham's brother? Why didn't he take it? God is sovereign. He is active in our world, and he works in many different ways, both picking people out for certain things, sovereignly choosing them to do certain things, and also judging. God covenanted with Abraham. Remember how he split the animals and went between them? Abraham was asleep. It was God's sovereign promises to Abraham, saying, if my promises don't take place, this will happen to me. Think how he was sovereign in Joseph's life in Genesis. On Genesis chapter 50, verse 20, Joseph said to his brothers, you meant it for evil, God meant it for good, when they sold him into slavery and all of the things that transpired. But God was working it all the way so that he would be Pharaoh's second-hand man. Second most powerful person on the planet. All in God's plan. God worked out every detail. The living and true God is active. And Exodus here continues the great story of God sovereignly working in our world. That the living and true God, who is the same yesterday, today, and forever, is active in our world now, just as he was back then. And tonight, Lord willing, we're going to look at Moses, we're going to look at Pharaoh. And then, Lord willing, in part two, we'll look at the people of Israel as a whole. Okay? Several things here with Moses. Let me say this real quick first. We're looking at the first couple chapters here. With God raising up Moses. Chapter 1, which Pastor Ron's been going through at the moment, covers several centuries. Now just think of the timeline here. Think of the timeline. Chapter 2, you got about 80 years covered. So you got... Yes. One century is 100 years. The 19th century, all the 1800s. Right? 19th century, 20th century, we're in the 21st century. covers every century is 100 years, right? So you got several centuries, essentially just over 400 years covered. You got about 80 years in chapter 2, how it's whittling down, and then look at practically the whole book of Exodus, chapters 3 through 40, is a little over 1 year. So you can see this is the primary emphasis of what's getting focused on in the book of Exodus, is what's happening in little over a year. In their lives. Now, so kind of think about that as we're looking at this now. Where God, though, is active. God is raising up Moses. God calls Moses. God uses Moses to lead the people out. But God raised up Moses in chapters 1 and 2. We remember at the end of Genesis, Joseph died. At the very end of Genesis, Joseph died. And over the centuries, then the memory faded of how he had helped Egypt store up for the famine. A new Pharaoh arose, ended up with oppression and slavery, right? We've been going over that with Pastor Ron. Chapter 2. Now, against this evil background of this new Pharaoh that's oppressing them, God sovereignly worked. We will, if you read it through, you'll see that God protected Moses. You could say in a little ark, like he protected Noah, in a little ark of papyrus on the Nile River. And what? In God's sovereignty, who finds Moses? Pharaoh's daughter. That just didn't happen, right? God is sovereign. Out of all the people that could have found him floating among the reeds, Pharaoh's daughter. God planned this, right? Sure did. And then they raised him for roughly 40 years. He got the best education on the planet. You think God's got a plan for Moses later in his life? I think so. God is sovereign, and he was working in this evil background, preparing Moses for his calling. God, it's been said God prepares the call for the man and the man for the call. This is a period of preparation for the call, right? Now, we're reminded of God's grace. Moses becomes a murderer, chapter 2, when an Egyptian was beating a Hebrew, an Israelite, and in anger, he struck him and killed him, murdered him. Now think, Moses, it's been said, is the greatest Old Testament deliverer of God's people. Murder. He fled to the Midian desert, east of Egypt, and was there about 40 years. He thought, basically, that's it for my life, talking to sheep, and that's the way it would end for him. But God had other plans, because God had him raised in Pharaoh's family with the best education on the planet for leadership, right? In the way of the world and how things work in politics and everything else. Chapters 3 and 4, God calls Moses at age 80. At age 80 now, you think, wow, that's pretty old, right? Lived 120 years, basically. So, just because one's 80 doesn't mean your life's done, right? No. I mean, God can call anybody to do anything at any age. God is the main character, as Pastor Ron has said many times. God is the main character of Exodus, not Moses. God's the one working, and we will see that play out when we look at various details from a bird's eye view. We'll see it going verse by verse, but to get a broad picture and say, wow, God is working. God is sovereign. He is active. That's his hand of providence. sustaining and governing all his creatures and all their actions. At the burning bush, God revealed himself to Moses and chooses Moses to bring his people out of slavery. Okay. Everybody get that written down that wanted to? Yeah. We'll keep going here underneath Moses. Underneath that heading on Moses is God uses Moses to lead his people. And here in particular, chapters 5 through 18, God uses Moses to lead his people. Essentially, you could say this: God accomplished his plan through Moses. Chapter 4, Moses returns to Egypt, right? The people believed the plan. In chapter 4, verse 31. Chapter 5, Moses demands then that Pharaoh released the Lord's people. And Moses confronts Pharaoh again and again. Chapters 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. Chapters 11 and 12, we have the last straw, you could say. Death of the firstborn. Now, some of these chapters we'll be going back to when we look at in part two, when we look at the people and what was happening. In 12, 29 to 30, we've got the plague of death itself. With the angel of death. In 37 and verse 51, the Lord brought the Israelites out. Turn to Exodus chapter 12. verse 37. So then, 1237, then the children of Israel journeyed from Rameses to Succoth, about 600,000 men on foot besides children. And then in verse 51, look down at 51, and it came to pass on that very same day that the Lord brought the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt according to their armies. It's the Lord who brought the children of Israel out. Emphasis again on God is the central character. God is working sovereignly. In chapters 13 and 14, the climactic account of God's victory. Chapter 14, 23 to 28, God made the wheels of the chariots the Egyptian chariots. Yahweh, the Lord, is fighting for them. Turn to chapter 14. Verses 23 to 28. Hear now the word of God. Chapter 14, verses 23 to 28. And the Egyptians pursued and went after them in the midst of the sea. And all Pharaoh's horses, his chariots, and his horsemen. Now it came to pass in the morning watch that the Lord looked down upon the army of the Egyptians through the pillar of fire and cloud. And he troubled the army of the Egyptians, and he took off their chariot wheels, so that they drove them with difficulty. And the Egyptians said, "Let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea, that the waters may come back upon the Egyptians." Right? The sea had been parted. God had parted the Red Sea. Israel had already gone through. The Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea, that the waters may come back upon the Egyptians on their chariots and on their horsemen." And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and when the morning appeared, the sea returned to its full depth while the Egyptians were fleeing into it. So the Lord overthrew the Egyptians in the midst of the sea. Then the waters returned and covered the chariots, the horsemen, and all the army of Pharaoh that came into the sea after them. Not so much as one of them remained. Look down at verse 31. Thus Israel saw the great work which the Lord had done in Egypt. So the people feared the Lord and believed the Lord and his servant Moses. This is the God, the true and living God, as he has revealed himself to be here in Exodus. And he's sovereign even over wheels. Even over wheels. Over the small things. When we have little car troubles with our little chariots that we run around in and our automobiles, God's sovereign over everything. everything. He is living and active in our world. He knows the hairs on our head, right? That's why Ephesians 1:11, he works all things after the counsel of his will. All things. Even wheels on chariots, right? Okay, under the same section C here, under Moses, chapter 15, the song of victory to God. Song of victory to God. And then we have a 3-month journey to Mount Sinai. Chapters 15, 16, 17, and 18. God sovereignly provided both food when attacked by the Amalekites. God is the main character in Exodus. At each point, the emphasis is upon what God is doing. I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah. It's to God. Right? All is owed to him. And we'll be getting to that more about that too when we think about Pharaoh. It's excellent. Thank you. Okay. Pharaoh. We think about God working sovereignly in Pharaoh. One said this, think of this. Moses, at the beginning, Moses has nothing, but gains everything. Pharaoh, though, at the beginning, has everything. it all. God is sovereign over both. I like the way that's worded. Think about that a minute. Turn over to 1 Samuel chapter 2. Verse 7. You can put that as a reference. First Samuel 2:7. Hannah's prayer. The Lord makes poor and makes rich. He brings low and lifts up. This is what God does. And what greater illustration of that right here with Moses and Pharaoh. We'll put A here. God placed Pharaoh in his position. Chapter 1, verse 8 and 9:16. Let's look at those a minute. Exodus chapter 1, verse 8. Now there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. Okay. Now turn over to chapter 9, verse 16. But indeed, for this purpose, I have raised you up, that I may show my power in you, and that my name may be declared in all the earth. This is God, the Lord God of the Hebrews speaking, the true and living God. I have raised you up. Who put that Pharaoh in place, that wicked Pharaoh? Who raised him up? God did. Why? That God says that I may show my power in you, and that my name may be declared in all the earth. Keep that in the back of your mind. As a cross-reference, too, think of Acts 17:26. The times and places and boundaries of nations are set by God. God hardens Pharaoh. So God placed him there. God's sovereign in Pharaoh's life, just as he was in Moses. God raised him up, he put him in that position, and God hardens Pharaoh. Is an example. Turn over to chapter 4, verse 21. And the Lord said to Moses, when you go back to Egypt, see that you do all those wonders before Pharaoh which I have put in your hand. But I will harden his heart so that he will not let the people go. Purpose, right? God's purpose. Why? God hardened his Pharaoh's heart so that Pharaoh would not let the people go. And God's name would be declared in all the earth. Now, I want to put some verses down here. Chapter 7 of Exodus, verses 3 through 5. Chapter 9, verse 12. Chapter 10, 20 and 27. And chapter 11, verse 10. All God hardens Pharaoh repeatedly. God hardens his heart. Now, we also see that Pharaoh, there's other phrases that says this, basically. Pharaoh's heart was or became hard. Was or became hard. That's chapter 7, verse 13 and 14. Chapter 7, verse 22. Chapter 8, verse 19. And chapter 9, 7. Pharaoh's heart was or became hard. Another words it a little differently. Pharaoh hardens his own heart. Chapter 8, verse 15 and verse 32. Pharaoh hardens his own heart. Now, one key one, chapter 9, 34 to chapter 10, 1, particularly the beginning part, chapter 1, the first part of that verse. With Romans 1, 24, 26, and 28. And thinking also with Romans 9, we'll look at these in a minute here. Romans 9, 17 and 18. Okay. Turn over to Exodus chapter 9. Verse 34. Thinking of the plague of hail going into the locusts here. Chapter 9, verse 34. And when Pharaoh saw that the rain, the hail, and the thunder had ceased, he sinned yet more, and he hardened his heart, he and his servants. So the heart of Pharaoh was hard. Neither would he let the children of Israel go, as the Lord had spoken by Moses. Beginning of chapter 10 there, verse 1. Now the Lord said to Moses, go into Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the hearts of his servants, that I may show these signs of mine before him. So what does it say there in verse 34? Chapter 9, when Pharaoh saw the rain, the hail, and the thunder had ceased, he sinned yet more, and he hardened his heart. He hardened his heart. And he sinned. Right? That's what it says, 9:34, right? And what does it say? I have hardened his heart. Chapter 10, verse 1, right? Okay. In Romans 1, verse 24, 26, and 28, three times it's emphasized that God gave them over to a depraved mind. God gave them over to the lust of the flesh. God gave them over. That's the wrath of God revealed, Romans 1:18. Now think about this. Pharaoh is a sinful man. Pharaoh himself does not want to let the people go. He wants sin. The greatest judgment God can give any sinner is to give them over to their own sin. Say, you want it? Have it. It's the greatest judgment God can give any sinner. God let Pharaoh then said, oh, you're sinful. I'll let you have more. Have it. He gives permission. He doesn't restrain him. It would be gracious. That's God's mercy and grace, that he restrains evil in the world, that it's not even more evil than it already is. Think about it like this. Think it like gravity. This is Pharaoh's heart. Pharaoh is sinful and he wants more sin with gravity. He wants to be on the floor. He wants more sin. And God says, fine. He hardened Pharaoh's heart. Did God do anything? No. Who hardened? Pharaoh did. See, in a sense, who sinned? Pharaoh did. Did God create sin in Pharaoh's heart? No. Did God cause him to sin? No. God gave him over to his sin, and that hardened him. Okay? God is sovereign, even over the amount of sin that's in people's lives. He can give a person over to sin. We know the human heart is sin. We've seen that in Genesis, right? In Genesis 6, before the flood, Genesis 6:5, every intent of the hearts of men are evil. Every intent. So all God has to do is say, fine. And it's certain we will sin more and more and more. God raised up this wicked Pharaoh. He says, I will harden his heart so he won't let the people go. I will let whatever sin he wants, I'll let him have it. God doesn't have to restrain anybody. Okay. I'll keep going here. So, God placed Pharaoh in his position. He raised him up. God hardened Pharaoh. He gave him over to his own sin so that Pharaoh even was more, Pharaoh did not want to let the people go, right? We'll keep going. Let me get this erased. God defeats Pharaoh. See. God defeats Pharaoh. Chapter 14. God holds back the waters, as we've seen. Causes the Egyptians' chariots to fall apart. I talked about the wheels falling off. Chapter 14, verse 4. Hardened to pursue. Pharaoh. Look over at chapter 14, verse 4. See, God's the main character, and he is sovereignly working over all the details in his plan. Chapter 14, verse 4, then I will harden, God speaking, then I will harden Pharaoh's heart so that he will pursue them. So when they finally leave with all of the plunder, with wealth and riches from Egypt, he finally releases them, lets them go, and then he's like, no, I want them back. He's wicked. He's sinful. God hardened his heart further. Same examples with Job, just real quick, with Job. You say, God said, you may do anything to Job, just don't take his life, right? The devil is just that way too. He's sinful. And God said, but don't take his life. Guess what? It was certain that he killed everything around him, took everything around him, but what? Didn't take his life. Then Satan went again and said, oh, it's just because he's got health. No, God says, okay, do anything to his body. He got boils from head to toe, right? But God said, don't kill him, right? Same thing. God let Satan do that. God gave permission. He didn't restrain Satan. And that's exactly what happened. He got boils from head to toe. When God's dealing with a sinful, wicked person who all they want to do is evil, God knows he'll get his purposes accomplished by giving them over to a depraved mind, letting them have the sin they want. And they will do it. So Pharaoh was hardened to pursue, and he pursued. It was certain he would pursue. Chapter 14, verse 17. Hardened to go in after them. To go in, I mean, where the waters were parted, to go down in. And here we're dealing with the Egyptians. Look at chapter 14, verse 17. And I indeed will harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they shall follow them. So God's plan was then what? He would let the waters collapse in and destroy them all. God is not passive. God is active. Turn over to Isaiah chapter 10. Isaiah chapter 10. Look at 12 through 15. The wicked king of Assyria. Isaiah 10, 12 through 15. king of Assyria went and plundered Zion and Jerusalem, right? Therefore it shall come to pass, when the Lord has performed all his work on Mount Zion and on Jerusalem, that he will say, I will punish the fruit of the arrogant heart of the king of Assyria and the glory of his haughty looks. For he says, the king of Assyria says, by the strength of my hand I have done it, and by my wisdom, for I am prudent. Also I have removed the boundaries of the people and have robbed their treasuries. So I have put down the inhabitants like a valiant man. My hand has found like a nest the riches of the people, and as one gathers eggs that are left, I have gathered all the earth, and there was no one who moved his wing nor opened his mouth with even a peep. Pretty arrogant king of Assyria. This is what God says. Shall the axe boast itself against him who chops with it? Or shall the saw exalt itself against him who saws with it? As if a rod could wield itself against those who lift it up, or as if a staff could lift up as if it were not wood. God is the one who brought king of Assyria to judge Israel. In a sense, God hardened the Assyrian's heart. And the Assyrian, he's full well convinced, because he's sinful. He's about raping, plundering, stealing, killing. And he's saying, by my hand I have done this. And God says, you know what? You're just an axe in my hand. I am the one who's sovereign. You're the axe in my hand, and you boast about what you're doing? I am the one wielding you against Israel. And we see that here in Exodus. God hardened Pharaoh to pursue once they had left Egypt. God hardened the Egyptians so that they in sin wanted everything back, all their slaves. And they went off, in the whole army, into the, when the waters were parted, and they went off into the sea to be completely destroyed. We can say this. Circumstances do not determine God's plans. Rather, God's plans determine circumstances. That's the story of the whole Bible. Circumstances do not determine God's plans. God raised up Moses. God protected Moses. God put Moses in Pharaoh's family to be found on the Nile River by Pharaoh's daughter. God gave Moses the greatest education on the planet. God made clear it was of grace, since Moses ended up being a murderer. God called him to go back and lead the people out. But it is God who is the one who is victorious. It is God who carried out his plan. It is God who redeemed his people. It is God who hardened Pharaoh's heart and raised up this Pharaoh, this wicked Pharaoh, and the one who hardened his heart. And it is God who defeated Pharaoh. It is God who worked in all circumstances, even over wheels of chariots. He is sovereign over the hearts of humanity. And he is sovereign over down to the very little things like the wheels on a chariot. We can say this. God will accomplish everything he said he will do. He laid out the whole plan to Moses. God will accomplish everything that he said he will do. God promises, and we must obey. Turn over to Romans 11. We'll end on this. Romans 11, 33 to 36. You think about this plan that God laid out to Moses and how he carried it out in great detail. How God was judging Pharaoh, judging the Egyptians. God was showing mercy. Romans 11, 33 to 36. Oh, the depth of the riches both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. Oh, their depth, their infinite. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. For who has known the mind of the Lord, or who has become his counselor? Who has first given to him, and it shall be repaid to him? These are rhetorical questions that nobody's fully known his mind. Nobody's been his counselor. Nobody's first given to him to be repaid. God owes nobody anything. Why? For of him and through him and to him are all things. To him be glory forever. Amen. God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And at times God raises up wicked rulers for his purposes. And you and I must never despair. We must never worry, even with a wicked ruler in charge. God has his plans. He works all things after the counsel of his will, even down to the wheels of chariots. Our life and everything around us and our circumstances are under God's control. He has foreordained whatsoever comes to pass. And it is great comfort for you and I who are his people. Think of that being Moses. If God be for us, who can be against us? Nobody. Let us rest in him.